Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Good morning. Welcome to JR Sunday. Each year on December 7th, Pearl Harbor survivors, veterans, and visitors from all over the world come together to honor and remember the more than 2,400 service members and civilians who were killed during the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. Another 1,200 people were injured in the attack, which permanently sank two of the U.S. Navy battleships, the USS Arizona and the USS Utah, destroying 188 aircraft. It's one of those dates, Dave, that in our history, you think about D-Day, you think about Pearl Harbor. When it comes to conflict, the world wars, those are two that I think all of us remember from the standpoint of the shock, the devastation, and the human life loss that happened. And I think it's good to continue, for all of us, to continue to remember those in that conflict and in others that protect the freedoms that we so much enjoy every day.
Yeah, I have a cousin who's now an attorney, but he did 2 years on a submarine when he was in the Navy, and he was stationed in Hawaii, right there by where all that went down. And so very familiar with Pearl Harbor and the attack and how people still to this day remember and have stuff that's going on, you know, December 7th to commemorate the attack.
No, as we spent the month out on the Carl Vinson preparing for that basketball game, had an opportunity to go into the Pasadena submarine. The men and women serving on those subs, huge respect for them. It's a battle unlike any other when you're confined to that space and the type of living conditions, the sleeping arrangements that they have. It's a unique way to fight a war or even protect the comfort of the freedom that we have today. So our thoughts, our prayers, we will continue to remember those dates, including 1941 on this date. Yesterday on the field, there were a lot of games that were interesting. The one that came rose to the top, I think for most people that are listening here on AM 760 WJR, is that Indiana-Ohio State game, number one versus number two. Ohio State doesn't score in the second half, 13-10 Indiana. They go in to the college football playoff as the number one seed.
I don't know if that game meant as much to Ohio State as probably maybe it meant to Indiana. Ohio State's going to still be there in the college football playoff. Indiana will probably be. If you remember last year, the top four seeds that got the bye all lost in their first game.
Right.
It's like Cignetti said after the game, I got 3.5 weeks to get this team ready for the college football playoff.
Right.
So we won't see him again until we won't see Indiana again until what, New Year's Day, I guess.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see at 12:00 today what happens and Alabama loses. Will Alabama get in?
Right.
Because they did beat Georgia during the regular season. So it'll be interesting to see what the committee comes up with at 12:00 and who the 12 teams going into the college football playoff will be.
Right. ESPN will carry that from 12 to 3 today with the expectation of the brackets will be rolled out in the first half hour and then they'll break everything down
in the
subsequent hours.
Yeah.
You know, as you look at right now, it's probably going to be a flip where Ohio State stays in as the number two. In most likely scenario, you'll have 1 and 2. You've got Texas Tech, who steamrolled BYU yesterday. It was a game that was dominated more than the score of 34-7. So Texas Tech's in there. Georgia, obviously, with the win. I think that's the first time Kirby beat Alabama in the championship game.
It is. But except for the fact that the guy wasn't there. Kalen DeBoer, I don't know. I don't know if he's long for this world with Coach. Alabama got used to all the winning with Saban.
Every year, yeah.
I don't know.
There's not many Sabans, though, to be honest.
I know.
He's,
you know, and then college football is different. You know, college athletics is different now with the transfer portal and everything. The players don't stay So it'll be interesting to see if we get runs in dynasties like we had with Alabama.
And will James Madison get in?
They might.
They might.
I don't know.
It looks like James Madison, Oregon might go on to play Texas Tech, and Tulane, Ole Miss, Alabama, Texas A&M will probably meet up for a chance to play Ohio State. And then, of course, Notre Dame and Oklahoma. Those are the likely scenarios.
Right.
There's a few surprises that could come right at the
bottom. Notre Dame back in. It doesn't matter anymore that they don't have a conference championship anymore. That used to be a big thing. Now it doesn't much matter anymore.
It's all good. We're going to be talking college hoops a little bit when we come up. There were some interesting games there. We're going to focus on the Duke game in a later segment, but you had number 4 and number 7, Duke, Michigan State. That game 66-60. I was over at the Breslin Center for that. It was as electric as I've heard the arena in a long time. There have been games that maybe rose a little bit higher, but the energy was there in a big way. You had Arizona and Auburn was a big game yesterday.
Yeah, late last night.
Yeah.
Yep. And Arizona won that one pretty easily.
They win that one. They're likely going to become the new number one as Purdue fell.
Purdue got smoked
by Iowa State.
Iowa State came in to Purdue and, 23-point win for Iowa State.
And then you come back here locally, and I say the second squad of the University of Michigan would compete for a Big Ten championship. This team
Michigan,
is loaded.
Michigan
top
is
to bottom.
So good.
101-60 over Rutgers.
They were 22-point favorites, and they win by, 41?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michigan is looking very good right now.
They have Purdue on Tuesday, they have Villanova on Tuesday, Michigan State. They'll have the week off. I believe it's finals week up there, and they're off to Penn State on Saturday, so they have a week.
Michigan State will be okay. Michigan State always, listen, kudos to Coach Izzo. He always schedules these games. This was a little bit different this year. Usually he doesn't win these games,
right,
but he has the team ready for March. But he beat Kentucky and
he
beat North Carolina, and they still look very good. But Duke is a different...
Beat Arkansas with Calipari.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Duke's a different type of team.
When Duke walked on the... There's certain teams, and I don't know if it's the uniform or what, they just walked out and they just looked solid, like big, physical. And the game went back and forth, and there was a lot of sways.
Michigan State had their chances 100%. They really did, and Michigan State played well. And credit to Michigan State. Unfortunately, I know I could... You just knew that Coach Izzo was just disappointed with how the game ended.
I sat behind Coach Fitzgerald at the game and had a chance to talk to him. We're going to be talking to Jay Batt right after the break, but as we go out, Coach Fitz had a nice little talk with his team after accepting the job there in East Lansing. Here's Coach.
This isn't going to be about me. It will be about what you guys do for yourselves and what you do for each other. We are going to operate the way we're going to play. And we are going to play fast and physical. So you don't do that just kind of when you feel like it. You do it every single minute of every single day. And that character revolves in everything you do. You're just not here to put a helmet on. You're here to make a difference in this community. Because so much is given, much is expected. And I'm going to work my tail off to develop you to be the best you can be in every aspect of your life. You guys unequivocally have my trust.
We'll be back with the director of athletics, Jay Batt, right after this. And welcome back to JR Sunday. It's great to have you with us on this snowy morning here in the city of Detroit. Michigan State Athletics is humming around right along. They've had a great weekend this weekend, bar the game we were just talking about. Duke-Michigan State, still a great game. You can tell Michigan State can play with anybody in the country through those wins they've had, even including the Duke loss last night. The gentleman at the head of it all who is guiding not only football and basketball, but the entire breadth of Spartan athletics, a contributor to the university as a whole and to the state of Michigan, Jay Batt, who was named director of athletics at Michigan State on June 2nd and has done nothing but put his foot on the gas pedal and is doing great things up in East Lansing. Good morning, TJ.
Morning, Mark.
It's great to have you with us. I want to start with Coach. I had an opportunity to sit behind him when I was the AD and he was the head coach at Northwestern. We had a unique and special relationship. There were text messages after every game. He is a quality human, a motivator, and somebody that I think any student athlete or their parents would want to have their sons playing for on the football field.
Yeah, you know, we're just so so excited to have Coach Fitzgerald join the team. He, like you said, Mark, he's a great leader, a great man, leader of men, really. And I think you can just look at his success on the field, but really just the quality of person that he is. And I think he's going to be a great fit for our Spartan family. He's already had a great week. I think I've heard a bunch of people say he's everywhere, and he's been doing just that. He's been all over the place at different recruiting things, high school things. He's been at all of our basketball games this week and continues to just be a great start and a great fit for our Spartan family.
When I help down here with the Coach Campbell search, I think any search that you do, there's intangibles that you're always looking for. And it's not always who's the most popular. It's who aligns on a variety of different elements, whether it's defense, offense, kids that have gone into the NFL in the case of a college coach. Do they know the Midwest? Do they understand the culture of the school of which they are going to? And sometimes when you hire an alumnus, it might be the most negative correlation of you're hiring someone because they went to school there and not because they have all the other intangibles. What was it you saw in Coach Fitzgerald that you knew was going to be the right fit, the right guy to bring into East Lansing at this time?
Yeah, man, I think you talked about it, Mark. It's fit, right? Because I think you look at somebody that's been a successful head coach in the Big Ten, which is a special and I think the best league in the country. You know, for 17 years previously, you know, Pat had a tremendous amount of success in Chicago. And so that part of it, I think he's a Midwest guy, right? As he likes to say, he was filling up B gaps with a neck roll in the 90s. He played in the Big Ten. He was unbelievably successful as a student athlete in the Big Ten. So he knows the Midwest. He knows the Big Ten. Recruiting wise, you know, his connections run deep with all of our high school coaches who are so important here in the state of Michigan, but across the Midwest. I think those two things are big. And then, you know, kind of at the end of the day, if you look at times in which Michigan State football has been really successful, right? You look back to Mark when you were piloting the ship and Coach D'Antonio was had us humming along in Spartan football and we were going to CFPs. We were about toughness and grit and winning the line of scrimmage. And you always knew that if you were going to have to go into Spartan Stadium, it was going to be a long day and you were going to get your nose bloodied. And I think that's a little bit about how we're going to get back to. We're going to play that brand of football. It's built around toughness and grit. And, you know, a lot like the Lions have been successful there in Detroit around some of those characteristics, we're going to look to bring those back. I think Pat's the perfect person to re-inject that into our football program.
Well, I have a tendency to call it like it is, and I will tell you that the day his name came out, I was so proud of you for being able to get to that point. College football, college sports has really changed significantly since I stepped out in 2018. It's become much more infused with money at all levels. Some of it good, some of it still challenging that needs to be tweaked. But your opportunities were enhanced greatly by a couple Spartans, Greg and Don Williams. He, of course, the CEO of AccuSure. He's been around Spartan athletics for a long time, but he has given you a foundation as you're pursuing the billion-dollar goal. He's given you the foundation to do some special things in East Lansing.
Well, the Williams sure has. And as you know, Mark, Don and Greg together are a powerhouse in our community and in East Lansing and the entire state. And for Spartan Athletics, the historic commitment that Greg and Don made, $401 million to support MSU. I think there's a couple things really important. I think first and foremost, it's important because it touches a lot of different parts of the university. Certainly the lion's share will support intercollegiate athletics, but also supports our Broad College of Business, our Entrepreneurship Institute, our band, the Spartan mascot program, and then certainly for athletics. And yeah, it's a, you know, college athletics, as you said, has shifted and it's going to continue to shift. And you know, being well capitalized through change, being nimble, being well aligned with your leadership, our presence, tremendous. That has put us in a place, I think, where we're ready to take ground. And obviously, you need resources to be able to do that. And this gift puts us into a place where certainly our a lot of our facilities work that we've master planned and are going to, you know, begin diving into in earnest now. You know, we'll move forward more quickly. But also, it's going to supercharge our ventures enterprise concept that we are working to create that has been approved by our Board of Trustees this fall and will be fully operationalized this summer. But that really serves as a huge catalyst for us to build out that revenue generating business arm of the athletic enterprise.
Before I let you go, Detroit 2027, the NCAA Final Four is men's Final Four is coming right here to Detroit. Michigan State is the host institution. I've been working closely with Kevin Paga and Seth Kessler and Larson and so many others up there. But it's something we've raised. We're approaching $17 million, which it takes for a local organizing committee to host. It's going to be a proud day to once again have a basketball court in Ford Field, Michigan State, the host institution, and we have the opportunity, the eyes of the world, to focus on our state.
Yeah, it's awesome, and thanks for your work and the entire organizing committee's work to land that. It's a heck of a process, as you know, Mark, to land the Final Four, and then it's a little bit the dog that caught the car. You know, it's hard to do them really well, and I know you guys have done that at a really, really high level. And we're excited about it. Listen, we'd like to be there. Heck, we'd like to be at every Final Four. That's the standard of Michigan State basketball.
I thought that was part of the contract, right? Michigan State has to be there.
That'll be just fine by us. So, yeah, no, we'd certainly love that. And, no, that's the goal every single day is to reach that elite championship level. And Coach Izzo has the team humming. I know, you know, obviously some disappointed we didn't get a victory last night. And, but I tell you what, I think you said it on the lead in here. Our basketball team can play with anybody. Had a tremendous November. They're going to get into exams this week and knock that out. And then they're going to be ready to roll through the Big Ten schedule here. And just, you know, the toughness, the grit, you know, similar to what we talked about with Coach Fitzgerald. I'm just in awe of how hard that basketball team works. And, you know, saw a little bit last night on the ice as well with Coach right. Nightingale and our hockey team grabbing a victory in Ann Arbor and just finding a way, willing themselves to a victory last night. And that was a lot of fun as well.
But Jay, there's nobody better to be in the chair right now. I'm so proud of what you've done. I look forward to what's around the corner. And you have my unwavering support down here in Detroit. Whatever you need, we're here to help.
Thanks, Mark. Truly appreciate you, man. Yep. Have a great day.
You as well. Jay Batt, the Director of Athletics at Michigan State University. He's a great one. And we've got much more to come here on JR Sunday, right after this short break. And welcome back to JR Sunday. 4 days ago, a great day for me. Coming back to Michigan State is the energy, the family attitude, the enthusiasm, as well as just one great, great football mind. Pat Fitzgerald named the head football coach at Michigan State, a dear friend, someone who
WJR traffic and weather first.
Sorry about that. We're all energetic here in the studio today, Pat. It's good to have you with us.
Looking at my hotel room, it looks like the traffic's pretty good here on East Lansing.
The traffic's good. Give the traffic room. You do everything.
I don't know what the road is outside of my hotel, but it looks clear with a little bit of snow. Be careful out there. It's going to be icy and slick.
You are the best. Welcome to East Lansing. Welcome to the state of Michigan. You know this place well, having been at Northwestern and played and coached in a number of different games with the Spartans. Now you're here. What could possibly be going through your mind 5 days in? There's so many things that are coming at you.
Well, I'm excited to go to St. John's this morning and go to Mass. So I'll get a chance to meet some more of our students, which is, you know, what this is all about. You know, it's about the student athlete experience. It's about the campus community and our players as I eventually get going with my staff in January. You know, educating our players on, you know, what we and how we want them to do things and when we want them to do things and then doing it together and being a part of one great, you know, Michigan State community. And then, you know, making the program something that not only our alums and everybody here in East Lansing will be proud of, but, every corner of the state of Michigan they'll look at our program and say, this is exactly what we're looking for as a college football program.
Well, you're such a good fit. It's the winningest coach in Northwestern history. You've also twice were Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. You've played the game. You've coached the game at the highest level. Now this opportunity comes along and you're sitting there with Stacy and your three sons, Jack, Ryan, and Brendan. What are they telling you as this opportunity comes forward? Because it's not a decision by you. It's a decision by the family that you're going to commit to this university.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so going back to, you know, a couple months ago, you know, a handful of schools started reaching out. I think my representatives, you know, talked to something like eight of the schools, you know, and we just started talking as a family whenever we were together collectively. And I was like, guys, I think I'm, you know, to the boys first, you know, really thinking about getting, and before I could get it out, they're like, absolutely, Dad, let's go. We're going. So, and then it was, you know, with Stace, it was, you know, as we look to, you know, 2 years from now, you know, we're going to be nesters. We're going to be empty nesters. Our son, Brendan's a junior in high school at Loyola Academy and over in Chicago. And so, you know, he'll be off in his college adventures. And so, you know, our first chapter as a couple, we were newlyweds in Moscow, Idaho, my first full-time job. We had just gotten married in July, and that December, January, we're in Moscow, Idaho. Privileged to work for Tom Cable in his first head coaching job. We go to Northwestern. We're there for, you know, a couple of years, you know, two or three, you know, and raised our kids. Unbelievable experience. And now, you know, Stacy and I look to the future, you know, to become a part of the East Lansing and, you know, greater Michigan community here. We're just in the Michigan State community. Yeah, we're just over the moon excited. And, you know, just I can't get enough done in a day. If I could ask for a couple things, which the good Lord won't give me, he won't give me more time.
The early message on you, though, is you are everywhere already. And to see watch you at the Breslin Center was amazing. The one thing I want to hit on is the decision making to take a job is not always an easy one. I mean, yes, you're getting paid. Yes, it's a head coaching job, but you have to look at your family first. The other side of the equation is Kevin Guskowitz, the president, Tom Izzo, Jay Batt. Even you go to Greg and Dawn Williams, you have a support base around you that if they're not there, it makes it a much more difficult decision to take a job like this.
You know, I would tell you at this time last week, the components that you just mentioned, my knowledge would have been, you know, Coach Izzo. And, you know, he's been a great friend. What you see is exactly what you get. He embodies exactly what Michigan State is all about and what being a great coach and a Hall of Fame coach is all about. So we had known each other, like you and I had, just over a year in the Big Ten. And, you know, Coach and I had spoken a handful of times, you know, in the last couple of years. And so just incredibly generous with his time and his wisdom. But so you check that box. And then, you know, Stacy and I just talked about real people, real alignment equals real opportunity. And, you know, we had that for so many years at Northwestern. We won championships when we were able to operate that way. And then I had the great opportunity to talk to Kevin Guskowitz and Jay Batt and then Jay's, you know, team. And it was, I looked at Stacy after her initial conversation and I'm like, there's no way these guys are being genuine. Then I start doing research and it's like, no, this is who they are. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was looking for, the alignment piece, Mark. And it has to start at the top. And I just, after a week, could not be more thankful for the alignment. And then to meet Greg and Dawn Williams, you know, this week, I was given some information that, you know, they're amazing, amazing gift and generosity. It's transformational for the entire Michigan State community and obviously for athletics. It's just genuine people that just care about this community. And I understand what my role is. We understand what our role is as a family, and just so thankful and grateful to be here.
I played the clip this morning to open up the show of you addressing the team for the first time, and to hear the tone in your voice and the words that you projected was remarkable and incredible. You take that, now you're going to walk onto the practice field for the first time for spring ball. What's that feeling going to be like? You've done all the talks, you've done all the speeches, you shook all the hands.
Yeah.
Now you're on the field.
Oh, I don't. We'll get to spring ball when we get to spring ball. I can't wait for my first squad meeting in January so we can get in the weight room. Like, you know, there's just boxes that are checking. We're putting the staff together and that's going amazing. And then, you know, at a certain point here, we'll be zooming around the holidays. I won't be, I got to get this staff some time off. Our personnel staff did an amazing job with our class on Wednesday. And obviously I want to give great credit to Coach Smith a really good friend, and I'm sorry that it didn't work for him. We spoke on the phone last Monday, and he's just such a terrific human being, and his staff that I've had the week with, you know, they're just terrific people. But, you know, as I look to the future, you know, everybody will get to know my kind of values and what we talk about. But at the top of what I'll educate and expect and hold a standard to our program, that's everybody, is you know, Lou Holtz's great acronym, WIN, what's important now. So just putting priorities together every single day of trying to, you know, win each day, one decision at a time, one choice at a time. And it's a blast. It's thanks to Stace and the boy and Brendan, because Jack and Ryan are in college, but mm-hmm. aren't here. But, you know, he's not 6 years old anymore. You know, right. He's 16. So FaceTime, what's up, Dad? Yeah, game was good, Dad.
Yeah. He was enjoying the game last night. He was, you guys were having a blast last night. It was good.
Oh boy, he was awesome. So yeah, no. So we're blessed. It's great. So
we're talking with Coach Fitzgerald, the new head coach of Michigan State. One thing that Tom Izzo did with his program that was so critically important is players of the past, part of the family, is bringing them back and making them part of the program. Is that an attribute that you feel is going to need to be successful with the football program here, is to bring those greats of the past and make them feel welcomed in East Lansing?
Yeah, I mean, it's one conversation building a relationship at a time. You know, it was with Pat Gillespie last night, his family for a Christmas party, and a lot of other great Spartans, you know, had a chance to see Keith Nichol, and we spoke on the phone. I mean, the list goes on and on. I could go through that, just, you know, starting to get to know guys one-on-one. You know, it's absolutely going to be the backbone of who we are. This alumni base of players, you know, similar to what I did at Northwestern, you know, from a standpoint that we want them engaged. We want them involved. We want them to mentor, share wisdom, help academically, help professionally. And then selfishly, as the football coach, I want the guys to talk about the guys that have been here and built successful teams on the field, have won championships, went to the Final Four in 15, Rose Bowl victories, the list goes on and on. What did it, you know, share your wisdom. What did it take? What was the sacrifice? What type of teammates were you guys? Talk about what your attention to detail was. How did you guys practice? What did it take when you had to face adversity to overcome it? What's it like running out in the tunnel in Spartan Stadium? How do we have to communicate on third down if you're a defensive player when Spartan Stadium's rocking? What do we have to do to communicate as an offensive line when we're in Kinnick Stadium and we need 2 yards to go get a first down to win a game? Like, just all those little pieces of wisdom, but just more importantly, just getting those guys back and letting them know we stand upon their shoulders and we want to make them proud, not only, you know, with what we're going to hopefully get accomplished very quickly on the field, but who our guys are, how they carry themselves, and how they engage in this, you know, Michigan State community that is truly, you know, all about what they've done before us to make them proud as we move forward.
Pat Fitzgerald, I'm going to get you off to Mass. Get with those students. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on JR Sunday. I'm so proud that you're my head football coach.
Well, Mark, I'm so thankful for our relationship and looking forward to having a great time, my friend. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everybody, and go green.
Same to you, my friend. Go white. We'll be back here on JR Sunday right after this. And welcome back to JR Sunday. Big thanks to Jay Batt, Director of Athletics, Pat Fitzgerald, head football coach for Michigan State, joining us this morning. Busy time up there, a lot of excitement and energy. Help 760 WJR thank our heroes this Christmas. It's WJR's Christmas on Us, our way to honor the dedication and sacrifice of Michigan's active military families and veterans. They make sacrifices all year long. Help us ensure they have truly a joyful Christmas. Do you know someone, a deserving family who serves our country? Nominate them now at WJR.com. Dave, the Detroit Lions won a game they had to win. The Dallas Cowboys rolled in here on Thursday. A nice win by the Lions, one they had to have. I think you lose that one, it becomes very bleak. Now they travel out a week from today. They'll take on Matthew Stafford and the L.A. Rams, a game that I'm looking forward to being at and heading out to SoFi Stadium and seeing all the energy of that facility. But it's a game that's going to be a challenge. It's also a game that can redefine the Lions' season.
Oh, 100%. I mean, basically the Lions are in playoff mode right now. They have to win out just to make sure that they have a chance to get into, maybe not win the division, but get into the playoffs. The question is, if you're a Detroit Lions fan, who are you rooting for today? The Bears or the Packers?
Right.
I think you got to be rooting for the Bears, right?
Yeah. Or a tie.
Or a tie, yes. That would be interesting. But I don't know if the Lions win the division. I think that may be out of reach right now. Unless if the Bears can beat the Packers, then it helps the Lions. If the Packers beat the Bears, then it doesn't help the Lions so much as far as the division is concerned. But they can only play on who's ahead of them right now. It was a nice win against the Cowboys. The Cowboys' defense couldn't stop a nosebleed in that game. And Jameson Williams came up really big. And then they got to go to SoFi and face Matthew Stafford and a Rams team that was the hottest team in the NFL and then went cross-country for a 1 o'clock game against Carolina and lost to the Panthers.
Right.
So, man, you don't know. This season is one of the craziest that I can remember in the fact that there's so much parity. There's not an elite team that has come out of the fold to like the Eagles last year that you kind of just knew they were just going to run the table.
There is so much I love about the Lions team, yet there's so much we have to do. We have to focus on what we are, not worry about the Bears and the Packers.
Yeah, the branch injury really hurts him too with the Achilles. That really stinks for him. Again, it's going to have to do with the offensive line protecting Jared Goff. So Jahmyr Gibbs and Montgomery, and he can sit back there and play well. Amon-Ra played great. He wasn't supposed to play, and he just came out and played well. And at what they call the Legion of Whom, which is their secondary,
right?
They're going to have to come up big too, because you're going to have to try to deal with Puka. You're going to have to draw with Puka Nacua and with the other receiver for the former Raider or the former Green Bay Packer for the Rams, and that's going to be tough.
One thing I do like is when you listen to Coach Fitz talk to the team the first time he met with them, the energy and the passion he has. Coach Campbell came in the locker room after that 44-30 win over the Dallas Cowboys, and there's a few moments of silence in this. Don't be confused by that, but you have to do your technical editorial comments on some of this. But here's Coach Campbell in the locker room after the game.
It's a damn good win, guys. That's a way to show up, man. It's a way to show up. We do what we want to do and how we're going to do it. You guys showed up? Was it perfect? No. Do we have a lot to clean up? Yeah, that's a good win, man. That was a hot team, right? And that's one down. We got another one to go after this. But we get a little breather here. We get just a little bit of breather, all right? Which is all good.
So now we're in that breather. We got Sunday off. We're watching all the others, and then they travel out west for this game. It's extra prep. Does it hurt? Does it help? You know, no, you don't know until after the game's over. But it's a game that's going to be the tipping point and the kind of the defining moment for this season.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be a huge game, and I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of Lions fans, including yourself, that is going to be out at SoFi. The Lions fans travel well. Especially these games at SoFi, you find that the opposing team has a lot of fans at these games. So we'll see what happens. Like you said, and it's very true. You only can play who is in front of you. You can't really worry about everything else. You kind of just have to handle business.
We'll have a little bit more on Coach Izzo in the last segment today as we wrap up. But before we come out of this one, I do want to touch a little bit on the energy and the passion he has. He's working the bench as hard as I've seen during the Duke game. He hasn't lost much of anything in his intensity. He had a few nice conversations with Coach Wojcik during the game, which was he's always teaching. He's teaching his coaches. He's teaching his players constantly. After the game, Graham Couch asked him a few questions about the Duke game specifically. Here's Coach Izzo.
I got two for you here. First of all, there's a difference between a discouraging loss and a frustrating loss. And I'm wondering where with this this seemed more frustrating, and I'm wondering at what point you realized this. You just said we prove we can play with anybody. What point you trust that that exists within this team, and does that change your expectations for them night in and night out the rest of the way?
What were the two words?
Frustrating and discouraging being different.
Is pissed off in there? No.
Can't be.
Yeah, I'd go to that one first. I really mean that.
I love my old roommate. He's his passion is there. His intensity is there. I love watching him coach a game. It's a game within the game. Just watching how he goes through every play, works the officials, motivates and teaches his kids. You look at East Lansing right now. You go from President Guskowitz, Jay Batt, Pat Fitzgerald, Tom Izzo, Adam Knight. You can go through all of them. They have quality people in East Lansing.
Yeah, 100%. I got to meet Jay Batt and coach and the president of the university every week with the tailgate show that we had a home game during the fall, and they're all great people. It's a great place to go to college. It's a great place to learn. And I think that the future's, and plus, did they just get like a big amount of money to upgrade the facilities that they're and
$401 million.
I mean, yeah. So I'm thinking that Michigan State's future is looking very bright.
Very bright. Our second half of the show is looking very bright as well, Dave. And we'll be back with that second half of the show right after the top of the hour. And welcome back to JR Sunday. A special thanks to all the good people out at Tryon Solutions, David Stone, Bonner Upshaw, Jeff Caponegro, the entire team. They're such a highly trained group of specialists in payroll, taxes, benefits, compensation. They bring all that together for your business so that you can focus on what you're great at. And what Bedrock Detroit is great at is diverse and far-reaching, not only the real estate that's owned and managed, but it's the experiences that folks have when they come to downtown Detroit in such a special way. On the heels of Thanksgiving, the parade, hobnobble gobble, the tree lighting, you had sports with the Lions, Michigan High School Athletic Association, the Spartans played downtown, the Red Wings were in action, as well as the Pistons. If you've not been downtown Detroit in the past few years, it's an incredible place to visit. The world is coming here, and Dustin Stoltzman is the Senior Director of Experience for Bedrock Detroit, doing an incredible job. First of all, a happy Sunday morning to you, Dustin. It's great to have you on JR Sunday.
Yeah, good morning, Mark. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, when you're talking to someone who hasn't been downtown lately, what's your elevator speech of what the experience is like today?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think Detroit is really special, but especially, at the holiday season. And, it's been so exciting to watch more and more people make downtown a part of their holiday tradition. The city is really bustling. There's things going on everywhere, something for everyone to do. I was actually down there as recent as last night, and just to see like so many people getting to experience it, themselves, and knowing how special it is to be a part of it. It's just been a really incredible thing to see this season.
If you're happen to be staying at the Shinola or at the Roost over at the Tower, it is, you open the door, you walk out, and there's so many things to do. There's some new elements that go along with a lot of the traditional, the Cadillac Lodge and the downtown Detroit markets have been part of our downtown infrastructure for quite a while. But every year you go to that, it's such a special feeling to walk through those small businesses, enter the Cadillac Lodge, have a few spirits or some nibbles, and really start your holiday experience in the Detroit city.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's really cool is that there are all of these staples and traditions, right? Like you mentioned, the Cadillac Lodge or, the downtown Detroit markets, like those are staples and have been for many years. And even though it's continued to change and evolve, and we see, new small businesses come through, and that's really exciting. But I think it's also the addition of, new experiences for people You know, Nick Gilbert Way, for example, this holiday season is brand new to the city. And, you know, just having that be a part of the entire mix of downtown and, you know, different things to do this holiday season is, you know, just really a great thing to be able to offer for, you know, the community, making downtown Detroit a part of their tradition.
Nick Gilbert, considered him a dear friend. His office was right next to mine. He inspired everyone that he came in touch with through his energy, his curiosity, and his creativity, leading to things like Gilly's, which is one of the great restaurant bars downtown. Mm-hmm. We now have Nick Gilbert Way, which can continue to create kind of the personality of Nick in a way when you come downtown and you walk between the two structures of the Hudson Building, what do folks see as they and experience as they walk through that passageway?
Yeah, as you touched on, Nick Gilbert Way, named after Nick Gilbert, the late son of Dan and Jennifer Gilbert, who passed away in 2003 from complications to NF. And I didn't personally have the opportunity to meet him, but from what I've, you know, been told, he was very optimistic and really just held that spirit for Detroit. And so I think people coming to Nick Gilbert Way this season, it's really an inclusive space for the public. It's a plaza designed for the community. It's a gathering space. It feels very festive and nostalgic while also being very modern and innovative. And for anybody who's coming for the first time this season, and you know, we've only been operating since November in this space, but there's all kinds of seasonal experiences for people to have. There's shopping and food and beverage. We have a French inspired cafe truck, Une des Trois, which has, you know, coffee and espresso beverages, amazing hot chocolate. There's also Forte Bellinger. They have warm donuts, roasted nuts, working with Woodward Farms as well. All kinds of vendors in this space. We also have music and entertainment. There's art. So for me, it's really something that I really am highlighting for everybody as like a must-see this holiday season. Of course, there's also a lot of nostalgic nods, right, with the Hudson's Bear. And so we have this larger-than-life, you know, lit bear installation. We also, you know, kind of reimagined the nostalgic Hudson's Santa Bear. And so we also have the Bear at Hudson's is what we're calling it this season, which is available at Nick Gilbert Way as well. But even, you know, in addition to that, GM, which is going to be, you know, our anchor tenant at Hudson's, we're working really closely with them. We have, you know, different vintage car displays and, you know, we'll have more partnership with them, of course, for some things coming soon for the public. So for me, it's just, you know, again, really nostalgic for people who have Hudson's in their heart as part of their holiday tradition, but a great opportunity for new, you know, guests and residents and families coming to downtown Detroit to be able to make this a part of new holiday traditions as well.
That's amazing. And I'm glad you brought up like vendors and partners you work with. Lions, Pistons, and the Red Wings. Spartans will be playing at Oakland on the 20th. You've got Hell's Kitchen and Shucked at the Fisher Building. You have to work and collaborate. You know, all of us are good as individuals. I think Dan Gilbert, Jared Fleischer, Laura Graneman with the Rocket Community Fund and Gilbert Family Foundation, we're all good at what we do, but we're better when we work together. So when you start to look at Claude Molinari and Marty Dobek over at Visit Detroit or Eric Larson and Dave Cohen at DDP, your mm-hmm. ability to collaborate with all those really delivers the best of the best for the city and those that are visiting.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think all of these experiences that we're able to offer and provide, like, obviously don't happen, you know, singularly, right? And I think the more that we collaborate, I think the more that we think about our partners and relationships and the community, you know, just the more dynamic the experiences that we provide are for the community.
Dustin, I can't thank you enough. We're working on the Final Four in 27 right now, and I know you're going to be leaning in on that one with us in a big way. Senior Director of Experience at Bedrock Detroit, I appreciate you so much for taking a few minutes this morning to share the excitement of the city with everyone listening.
Yeah, my pleasure. And just for all information, checked out deckedoutdetroit.com.
Deckedoutdetroit.com. Perfect. Appreciate you, Dustin.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Yep. And we'll be back here on JR Sunday. We're going to be talking with Gleaners and some of the good work they're doing. Welcome back to JR Sunday. Help 760 WJR thank our heroes this Christmas. It's WJR's Christmas on Us, a way to honor the dedication and sacrifice of Michigan's active military families and veterans. They make sacrifices all year long. Help us ensure they have truly a joyful Christmas. Do you know a deserving family who serves our country? Nominate them now at WJR.com. Speaking of service and making a positive impact on those that are our neighbors, our friends, just folks that are in the community that perhaps are having some challenges and need something a little extra, Gleaners has been, it's nationally known, it's just doing an incredible job here in Southeast Michigan, headquartered right here in Detroit. So much about them is good. And Kristen Sokol, the Senior Director of Advancement Communications, Marketing, Media, and Public Relations, is joining us. First of all, a good Sunday morning to you.
Hello and good morning.
Kristen, for those that have heard the name but don't really understand maybe the breadth of work that Gleaners does across Southeast Michigan, can you give kind of a high-level talk on the various ways that Gleaners goes about helping our neighbors?
Yeah, so Gleaners was established in 1977, so a long time and not that long ago. And we collect, store, and distribute millions of pounds of food every single year. And we may be known for distributing shelf-stable items, but we also distribute a significant amount of produce. So just last year alone, we distributed 47 million pounds of food overall. 15 million pounds of that was fresh produce because we know people need balanced nutrition. And we meet people where they are in order to give them access to that nutrition. And we do that by working with over 300 partners. Those are soup kitchens, schools, agencies, partners who know their communities best and can give families and households what they need. And then we also supplement that with distributions we do ourselves in parking lots across Southeast Michigan, where if a family needs food, they don't have to make an appointment. They just can come when we have a scheduled drop, get food for their family, about 35 pounds, again, of that balanced nutrition, lean protein, whole grains, fresh produce, and especially milk.
What's your connecting point, Kristen, between those in need and those willing to help support and give? How do you... I'm assuming you have partners in the community that come in and help support Gleaners. You have to communicate in a way where folks that are hungry or need that nutritional support know about Gleaners in a way. How do you, as the senior director of all these different public-facing areas within Gleaners, connect those two components together?
Well, it really is only through collaboration that we can strengthen both sides of this equation. And so you asked kind of a complex question in that on one side, that collaboration is making sure we can get enough food to provide to the community. And so that's fostering relationships with manufacturers, retailers, organizations that are willing to come in and help us do the work. And the other side of that is collaboration, again, with a partner network, 300 strong, where they know their communities well. Overall, we know that people who need support are more likely to ask their friends, families, and neighbors first for trust and support and to find out about what else is available. But we also make information available by posting on our social networks on a regular basis what our opportunities are. We operate pantrynet.org, where anyone who needs help can see the closest distribution or partner nearest to them and what they have to offer. And this has been a great way for us to give some power back to people who may be facing food insecurity, to really look for the places that are nearest to them, giving exactly what they need when they need it.
We're talking with Kristen Sokol, the Senior Director of Advancement, Communications, Marketing, Media, and PR at Gleaners. Cam Barrett is a dear friend of mine. I sort of mentored him coming out of the same high school that I attended, and he leads a lot of the efforts at Kroger, and I know Kroger works extremely closely with you on solving and connecting and bringing these elements together. Is that one example that kind of rises as a as a local corporation, local retail, that takes what they have and gives it to the folks that Gleaners serves with you as the passageway.
I love that you brought up Cam. He is the great convener, and we love our friends.
I wish he had a little more energy. He's sometimes so quiet. I'm kidding.
I know. If only we could get him to speak up a little bit
right.
more,
right?
Right. He is a great advocate for the community, and Kroger is a good example because Kroger has dedicated some of their mission to making sure that food insecurity is a priority and taking care of it, and doing that by making connections, even for Gleaners, they're a match partner for us right now so that anyone who donates $1 instead of the 3 meals we normally can provide, we can provide 6 because Kroger is helping supplement that. They also donate food to us on a regular basis. They send volunteers to our space on a regular basis. And so this is what we mean when we say we can only do what we do because of that collaboration. And it reaches far and wide with opportunities that the sky is the limit if we only come together and thinking about what is possible for creating the hunger-free communities we know can take place.
And Kristen, I know firsthand, this is not just an urban challenge. It's urban, rural. There's folks everywhere that need this. The good people out at Howell, we're going to have Tom Gould on next from Howell Public Schools, and I know their student body is very supportive of Gleaners and other efforts as well. But can you follow up on that urban kind of rural? It's a dual challenge. It's not just within the city.
That's right. We know that hunger does not have a specific face, and it doesn't have a specific zip code. Unfortunately, it lives in every neighborhood in Southeast Michigan. We serve Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, Monroe, and Livingston counties. And in every single one of those counties, we have people right now who may not have enough food in their cupboards to eat all of their meals for today. And in rural communities, it's also a challenge because it's about access and geography. It may take you longer to get to a grocery store to get what you need. And there are typically fewer partners in rural areas who are able to meet the unique needs of community. So supplementing what we do in urban areas where it's easy, geographically speaking, to offer more connection points, having a concentrated effort to make sure that we're also taking care of our rural neighbors who may have transportation issues or otherwise.
For those that are listening this morning, Kristen, how can individuals, companies, retail, how can they help Gleaners in a way, help our neighbors?
There are a variety of ways. So those dollars are king, as they are for everybody, because we, as I mentioned, can provide 3 meals for every dollar that's donated to us. So a great way for an organization or company to raise dollars is by holding a virtual food drive. And I know Rocket employees in the month of November raised over 280,000 meals through their virtual food drive. And it's because of the dedication and tenacity of raising those funds for community. And the other way is by volunteering time. We can only get those millions of pounds of food out the door because we have dedicated volunteers who come to us for our shifts every single day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, packing boxes that go directly out into the community on our mobiles, through our partnerships with schools, through our partnerships with senior communities. Those are two super easy ways that you can get involved. And there's more information about that at gcfb.org.
Well, Kristen, I can't thank you enough for joining us this morning. The work you do is incredible. And Laura Graneman is a big fan of all you do at the Rocket Community Fund and Gilbert Family Foundation, as is the folks at Howell who we'll be talking with next. Kristen Sokol, the Senior Director of Advancement, Communications, Marketing, Media, and PR right there at Gleaners. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You as well. And we'll be back with Tom Gould from Howell Public Schools right after this. Welcome back to JR Sunday. My father was a K-12 public school administrator for most all of his life. And when you hear stories coming out of public schools, especially inspired by the work that students are doing, it's one that's I immediately jumped to. I'm like, this is the future of our community. This is the future of our nation. And these young people that are making choices and giving efforts to do good is remarkable. The folks up at Howell Public Schools is really a benchmark to aspire to. The impact they have on people, the work they do, is quite incredible, led by a great staff, great group of teachers, advisors that are kind of guiding these students through the process. They've really established decades of impact now in a variety of different ways. And Tom Gould, the director of communications at Howell Public Schools, is joining us now. Good morning to you, Tom. It's great to have you with us. We just got off with Kristen Sokol, who is with Gleaner. She's the senior director of all the public-facing components there. And she walked through what Gleaner's does across Southeast Michigan, the multi-county. Howell Public Schools really has an impact right there in your county in a way that elevates. I want you to give the numbers, but there are so many ways that you can count the success that your student body's had.
Yeah, you know, our students are very civic-minded, and we have a couple real large philanthropic events that take place each year. And in November and December, one of them is a food drive for Gleaners, and it benefits really Livingston County. The items donated support helping eliminate food insecurity in our area. And over the last just 2 years, the impact has been huge. Between food donated and monetary donations, over 2 years, we've provided more than 100,000 meals to families right in Livingston County.
And that's incredible. It's when you go through, and I think your campaign right now is going through Friday, the 12th of December, and kind of collaborating with Gleaners on that. What are some of the things the students are doing to encourage not only cash donations, but also the poundage of food that you're able to come up with there through Howell Public Schools?
So the food drive's led by student leadership at the high school. We've got a great group of advisors who support them, but it's really student driven. And those high school students come up with various kind of prizes and incentives for the different schools and grade levels. There's a pretty healthy and friendly competition between all of our schools to see who's going to be able to bring in the most food and monetary donations, but they make it really fun. And then there's another piece of it in that our students go and volunteer at the Gleaners location in Livingston County. So they really see where the need is and what our efforts are supporting. And that, I think, really drives home what we're trying to do and why it's important. And, you know, it's food insecurity is one of those kind of hidden needs a lot of the time. You don't know what someone does or doesn't have in their house or what they can and can't get when they go to the store. Going to volunteer at Gleaners really shows where that need is and what we're trying to do.
We were talking with Kristen about the connectivity between the food that can be supplied and then those neighbors that need the food and how you make that linkage. With the mobile food pantry kind of making stops at each one of the schools of Howell Public Schools, that has to be a way of not only providing immediate impact for someone, but also creating awareness and education about how Gleaners and Howell Public Schools connect together, and you can do more and you can get more through that process of those mobile units being basically located at each of the different schools you have there in the district.
Yeah, you know, Krista had mentioned that especially when you start to get more out in our way, you know, there are some transportation barriers to be able to access the supports that Gleaners provide. So by bringing the mobile food pantry into the community, you know, we host it right on our central campus, right in the middle of our community. So it, one, raises awareness of the supports that are out there and makes it very visible, but it also starts to eliminate those barriers of transportation that families face. And, you know, I am so thankful for all the support that Gleaners gives us and the efforts that they make. You know, in addition to the mobile food pantry in Howell, they're hosting those throughout Livingston County. They're really, they saw the barrier with transportation, and they've really broken that down to bring food out into the community. And it's just, again, I'm so thankful for the partnership with them and everything that they've done to support fighting food insecurity in Livingston County with us.
One other thing that caught my eye with Howell Public Schools at a very high level, because my background is in impact and how you can create good for others, for your neighbors, how you can create memories. You have a program up there called Senior Survivor, and it's really fed off the show Survivor, where the students get engaged. But over the 18 years, nearly $1.6 million has been raised and distributed to a variety of different charitable organizations that are out there. I think in the first year in 2008, it was a $5,000 grant that was provided. And since 21, it's been approximately $200,000 a year that these students have had fun, have had a purpose, have engaged, and are delivering just impacts for these organizations that's, one, appreciated, but two, transformational for each one that you work with.
Yeah, Senior Survivor is by and far the largest philanthropic event that our students plan and host. And when you talk about, you know, you had mentioned seeing young people doing great things, when we have that final assembly and they reveal the amount raised each year, it's unbelievable. You know, last year was kind of on the topic of food insecurity, was benefiting the Ivy Table, which is a pay-it-forward restaurant in Brighton, and they also have grab-and-go locations for free meals around the community. And we raised nearly $200,000 for them to get their restaurant up and running and to fight food insecurity. It's an incredible program. We talk about being Highlander Nation and One Howell out there, and everyone comes together truly in a One Howell fashion to rally behind these causes and really support what their mission is. And it's just, again, it's awe-inspiring when we hear that final amount raised each year. And when I started with the district, I think we were in the around $20,000 range in what they were raising. So to see where we were and where we've come to this point, it's incredible.
And there's two sides to it, right? There's raising the money and really changing the future of a charitable organization. But there's also the ultimate survivor, which is the game within the good, where students have an opportunity to basically get through the process of the island, similar to the TV show, but become the ultimate survivor at the end of the Survivor Week.
Yeah, so it is, as you mentioned, it's based on the show. On Sunday of Survivor Week, we have 14, 16 seniors show up to Howell High School, and they're staying in the building for hopefully the whole week. And at night, they are competing in challenges for rewards, for immunity. You know, it might be that you get an air mattress that night, or that the next day you can't be eliminated. And then during the day, they're having bake sales and food sales and fundraisers. And each day following lunch, they turn in the money that they think they need to stay in the game. And then the two students who turned in the least amount of money that day are eliminated and sent home. So there's the overall goal of raising money to support these great causes. And then there's a lot of fun involved in it as well for the students, and really capping off their senior year with an incredibly memorable experience.
Well, I know at least one of the groups being considered. Coach Izzo and I both participated in one of their events, and they, like many of the other organizations, would be changed in such a positive way as they do good for others in the community. So your students are and advisors are constantly impacting Southeast Michigan, Howell, Livingston County, and I applaud you. I applaud the faculty there. But most importantly, I applaud the students of Howell Public Schools for stepping up and doing more than what's expected to be a student in high school.
Yeah, they're incredible. You know, I think it's every generation says, oh, kids these days. And because of the seat I'm in and what I get to see when I hear that, my mind automatically goes to, yeah, kids these days are absolutely incredible. I am excited for what they continue to do and the impact they continue to have, because these students go so far above and beyond to really support others. You know, part of our portrait of a graduate, we call it the portrait of a Highlander, is to promote social awareness. And our kids take that and run with it to support those who need support, whether it be food insecurity, housing insecurity. You know, one of the senior survivor years, it was actually a two-year project, but it built an inclusive playscape in our community, almost $500,000 raised to build this community playscape that everyone could enjoy. So kids these days are absolutely incredible.
Tom Gould, thank you so much for your guidance, leadership. You inspire, and we appreciate the work that you and everyone at Howell Public Schools is doing for our community.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on this morning.
Thank you. And we'll be back here to wrap it up on JR Sunday right after this quick break. Welcome back to JR Sunday. Kind of in the wake of the Duke-Michigan State game, one of the classics, two top 10 teams played. Coach Izzo had some comments after the game that, you know, I kind of, when I look at PGA Tour golfers, when I look at NFL games, this game kind of set the tone for what needs to happen for great success. It's like every game, there's little elements of the game or elements of the round that you might have on the PGA Tour that take you from good to greatness. And Coach Izzo had a couple comments on it that I want to hit here now. Here's Coach.
You know, I said, keep your eye on some teams that have had a million transfers and all that. Some it'll work for. Some it'll work. It won't work for. I watched some of the Gonzaga game last night, and it just, that's why I'm trying to keep my composure on where we are yet. And I told you it'll be the middle of December. It'll still be the middle of December before I anoint anybody, to be very honest with you. But it was just a shame that we didn't find a way to get some little things done, but it was impressive the way they found a way to get the little things done.
So Dave, when you walk through some of those, or Jason Fistler's in the studio as well, when you walk through those things, whether you're a business, a golfer, a football team, sometimes there's that little effort or that little incident that allows you to win a game. You look at Ohio State and Indiana. Ohio State and Indiana are two really good teams. Indiana had an intangible that was a little bit better than Ohio State and gives them the win. Coach Izzo, he believes it. He thinks you as a golfer, Dave, if you take one stroke, just one stroke off every hole, you're a PGA Tour player.
And no.
It's that little margin of difference. Yeah, you got to do it four rounds every week.
No.
But, right, it's little things that make us better. You can be in any business, any restaurant, any organization at all. A little bit more and a little bit different makes you better.
No, 100%. And you know, Coach Izzo talked about the rebounds after the free throws. He called it, I forget what he called it. He has a name
blockout.
For it.
Blockouts.
Yeah. But there was, I think, three or four rebounds Duke got.
Wait, wasn't it called cutouts?
Cutouts. Yes, he talks about the cutouts.
Yeah, well, let's listen to Coach. Let's have him tell it.
I think we got a chance to be really good. We just, our margin for error, and this is what we've said all along, our margin for error is slim. So you can't miss free throw cutouts. And those of you that come once in a while and actually watch a practice instead of just sit up there and be on Twitter, we work on it a lot. And every game day, or the night before in this case, we spend, last night, practice ended, my staff said we forgot free throw cutouts because I usually do them day of again. So we stopped and we did it and talked about it. And that's unexcusable. I don't care if parents are mad at me. I don't care if media is mad at me. I don't care if my wife's mad at me. And I don't. The worst part is I'm mad at me because I didn't get that done and it cost us. And, you know, give them credit though. I sound like I'm not giving them credit. I'm the job John's done, I'm in awe of. You know, most people don't want to follow a legend. He followed an icon, and he's done a hell of a job.
That's that little thing, cutouts. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, cutouts.
You got to appreciate his passion still.
I love Coach. Can he stop hitting the podium, though? please?
During his press conference?
Yes. That's, can you stop hitting the mic?
Also, Twitter is now X. It's not Twitter
yes.
anymore.
So but I'm going to let you tell him that, okay? I'm not going to tell Coach Izzo that. But it's a little, but yeah, I think they turned into, one of them turned into a three, and I think the other two turned into points for Duke, and it was only a 6-point game. So you, he is right. It's the little things, the intangibles that sometimes mean if you get the win or the loss.
You had a couple trivia questions for us here in the studio. Mm-hmm. One of them is relative to a good friend of mine who we're going to try to get on here in a couple weeks to talk about a monumental moment. But talk about the Peyton Manning question.
Oh, we were talking about the Super Bowl this year being in Santa Clara, and so that was the year that the Broncos beat
the Broncos, of course, yeah, the Broncos,
the Carolina Panthers. But it was Peyton Manning's last pass was caught by a Michigan State Spartan,
right.
And who was it that caught the 2-point conversion?
One of the nicest guys,
and it was Benny Fowler.
Benny Fowler,
yeah. So we thought he'd be a cool guy to get on to talk about the 10-year anniversary of that Super Bowl as we get closer. And because Super Bowl this year, Super Bowl 60 is again in Santa Clara.
We will try to get him on. And we might want to start focusing on, it's kind of funny how you go through different seasons, but already here we are in December and there's talk about the Detroit Tigers, expectations, what should be done. Is there any off-season dealings that are going to take place to get us to that level that's a little bit different? Our programs are doing good. Detroit, the Tigers, great season last year. You've got the Pistons in first place. The Red Wings are competitive and right in the hunt early on in the season. The focus on the Tigers, spring training, all that, we're going to have to start talking about some of the elements that are going on there.
At Tarik Skubal, are you going to keep him? You're going to trade him? What are you going to do? Are you going to sign him? I don't think they're going to sign him. So, you know, and we know his agent, so...
Yeah.
You know, Jason's a big baseball guy. I think a lot of people think that they should trade him.
If you don't trade it, or if you do trade him, you better get half of a lineup back for him,
right?
Bats, because you're going to need to outscore people,
right?
So yeah,
and it's that dilemma between, you know, he is the face of the team right now. He's 100%.
He's amazing. I don't want to see him go.
100%.
I don't want to see him in a Red Sox jersey, Yankee jersey, Dodger.
I mean, that's probably it's who can afford him, and those are the teams,
right?
Dodgers, yeah. Yankees, Mets, Boston. You know, the teams with the big TV deals, they're the ones that are going to be able to either trade for him or to sign him. You don't want to lose him though and not get anything for him.
No, that's the intangible.
No, they won't let that happen.
It's his. I think Tiger fans right now view him as the face, and if the face is gone, yeah, you might get some people to fill in, but what have you lost in the...
I mean, I will say this about the Tigers. They
once
were
in a lifetime pitcher.
Years in a row, the Tigers have been one game away from the ALCS.
Because of the offense.
So can they...
Pick up enough bats?
One more year.
Yeah.
Just do enough for free agency. We know they didn't do anything at the trade deadline.
Right.
Can they do enough in free agency to take that next step before that window closes? If you know, we always talk about teams that have windows of opportunity, and you want to take the advantage of that window before it closes.
Yep, that's
definitely what the Tigers are in right now.
Much more. Bob Krause is filling in for me next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Special thanks to all the members out at Tryon Solutions, helping companies relieve the stress and burden for your business. Inside Outside Guys are coming up next with Ken and Chuck. Thanks to you for joining us. A big thanks to Jason Fissler and, of course, the kingpin, Dave Rieger. And as always, keep driving, Detroit.